You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. It is Friday Eve here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a fine guest coming up next, but I got to tease what's going to be happening at the bottom of this hour. Everybody knows Rojo was at the Milwaukee Press Club yesterday. Said some wackadoo things because that's what Rojo does. But he went from that event to the Medical College of Wisconsin, and the wackadoo got even more wackadoo. And we've got some of the sound. They've been trying to bury it and scrub it from the interwebs all day long, but we've got the sound, and we're going to give you that exclusive. I think we're the only media outlet that's going to be giving you that sound across the state, so do not go anywhere. Rojo Crazy is coming up next, but my next guest is anything but crazy. She is an award-winning professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a commentator on all of the national news programs you could ever think of. And she's been a frequent guest of this program. I'd like to call her a friend, even though we've only seen each other in two dimensions. She knows a ton about the Russia and Ukraine situation. She's going to help us all get a little bit smarter this afternoon. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Dr. Herrera. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
So let's just start with the basics. Where do things stand? There was a lot of seeming movement for the first bit of the Trump administration, one-sided, to be sure. We'll get into that a little bit more. But it has seemed quite quiet over the last couple of weeks, though we've got some recent sound from the president. I just wanted to take this sound here. I believe this is yesterday in the Oval responding to what appears to be something of stalemate isn't the word. We'll discuss what it is that we're observing right now. But here was the president yesterday on the Russia-Ukraine conflict. It's not playing, Jacob. Let's just try this one more time because I do want this for setup. Still not getting it. We'll work on that. So we'll return to what the president said yesterday, but let's just talk about the status of things as they stand on the ground. What is the current status in the Ukraine conflict right now?
Well, in short, the war continues. So people continue to being killed on the front lines. And a couple of, new developments. Russia launched one of the largest strikes across the country, over 600 missiles and drones over the weekend. There was a big prisoner exchange, and there's continuing, since the Trump presidency started, discussion of potential for peace talks.
Let me ask you this question instead of making a statement. Do you take it as a coincidence that Russian missile strikes seem to be both ramping up in frequency and targets, since there seem to have been a significant retrenchment, a significant stepping back from the support of Ukraine, especially in the last, I'd say, month?
Well, on the one hand, you could see it as strategic in the sense that Russia thinks this is their chance. They could be weaker in the future. The U.S. has weakened its support for Ukraine. So it seems like, okay, this is an opportunity. So on the one hand, it seems strategic. On the other hand, President Trump has blamed Ukraine and Zelensky so many times, and he's ready to just really cut off Ukraine, it looks like. And it's at those moments that Putin launches these completely inhumane attacks that get a lot of attention and make it hard to make the case that it's all Ukraine's fault. So from that perspective, it's just idiotic on the Russian side that Trump is just about ready to blame everything on Zelensky, and then they do something that literally cannot be blamed on Ukraine, even by the most kind of pro-Russia people. So in that sense, I agree in some ways with President Trump saying he must be crazy. I mean, what is he doing? Because if he's trying to curry favor with Trump, it's not working.
It seems to me that as we watch Donald Trump, in many ways, I think, kind of lose interest in it. Like Iran on ending the war in a day, and he seems to be again, losing interest. He can't chalk up the quick win. And the rhetoric, not only calling it Zelensky's war, though he's defending his country's sovereign border from an invader.
Right.
He's been calling it Biden's war, which is sort of like equally mystifying. Is this just part of the Trump isolationist move? Can we tease these things out, or is there no identifiable motivation, which is kind of where I end up coming back to?
Okay. I think Vance is the most isolationist in the sense that he just says, I don't care. Like, whatever. Like, just do what you want. Who cares? Not our business. So for Vance, it's like, I don't care about a ceasefire. I don't care what happens. It just means nothing to me. People are dying, whatever. So in this way, he's just purely isolationist. Trump, for whatever reason, decided, even during the campaign, he's going to end the war. He wanted his Nobel Peace Prize, et cetera. So this is a little bit at odds with the isolationism, because he thinks, well, I'm the deal maker. I'm going to end this war. He could have at any moment said, you know, actually, I just don't care either. Like, I'm with Vance. Like, we both don't care. But he kept saying, no, I'm going to end this war, but was reluctant to acknowledge the basic fact that Putin is not interested in ending the war. And it's Russia that you have to put pressure on if you want to end the war. So without acknowledging that, all of the efforts of talking kind of go nowhere, which then led to frustration. And Trump saying, like, well, anyways, like, it's up to them. But I will note that he has, like, in the last couple of weeks, he used to say it was all Biden's fault. He still says it never would have happened if I was president. Then he started blaming Ukraine entirely, saying Ukraine never should have started. I don't know if it's clinging to hope, but I do think it's a little bit significant that in the last couple of weeks, he has said that Russia is also to blame. So it's Biden's war, it's Zelensky's war, and it's Putin's war. And he has brought Russia in as like a kind of acknowledgement that, oh, yeah, maybe Russia has to do something for the war to end.
Yeah, it seemed for a time that the president needed to be given a very simple one-page PowerPoint presentation that said a country cannot war itself. Like, you actually need another party to engage in the war. We've got that sound now. Let's take a listen. This is Donald Trump yesterday.
Yeah, I'll give you an update. I'm not happy with what Putin's doing. He's killing a lot of people, and I don't know what the hell happened to Putin. I've known him a long time, always gotten along with him, but he's sending rockets into cities and killing people, and I don't like it at all, okay? We're in the middle of talking, and he's shooting rockets into Kiev and other cities. I don't like it at all.
President, what do you want to do about
and
that?
I'm surprised. I'm very surprised. We'll see what we're going to do. What am I going to tell you? You're the fake news, aren't you? You're totally fake.
Okay. It's like the perfect exemplar of what you were just saying, right? There's this, first of all, what the hell happened to Putin? Again, memo, Mr. President, same guy. I'm very surprised. Really? Again, did you not get the briefing on January 21st? I'm being super glib here, but it seems to me that his disillusionment has increased and he's finding the political footing difficult. And I think your distinction between Vice President Vance and President Trump is really important here. And I wonder if you have a thought about, is Vance influencing him at all? I mean, you look back at Vance's comments on this conflict back to 2022, and he literally said, I don't care what happens in Ukraine, in one of his speeches. It is I don't have the sound, but it is a verbatim quote because I've read a lot of his thoughts on this. Is what happens next? If President Trump is now disillusioned and disappointed and doesn't like that Putin is sending these missiles to kill thousands of Ukrainians in Kyiv, what does he do next? Assuming anybody can prognosticate in the least bit about President Trump.
Yeah, well, one thing I think that's important is to think about, like, what is the structure of U.S. support? So for one thing, we share intelligence. Another is we provide weapons, we provide money, and we also provide agreements to allow Europeans who bought our weapons to let Ukrainians use those weapons. So those are all really important things, not to mention the sanctions. So the U.S. could shift by cutting off any of those things that we're doing for Ukraine. We could ally more strongly with Russia, ending the sanctions. That wouldn't end the European sanctions necessarily, but that it would be damaging if we did that. We could pull out of NATO. So there's like a lot of things we could do. In a certain way, the status quo of just not changing any of that is pretty good for Ukraine, except on the weapon supplies, where they're likely to run out at the middle to the end of the summer. So in some ways, if they do, if Trump just says like, well, we're just not going to do anything, meaning we're going to keep doing the things we're doing, which are sort of low cost to the U.S., that's still sort of good for Ukraine. But I mean, it's really important for people to understand there's no American troops on the ground in Ukraine. Ukraine is not asking for American troops. It's very different, for example, than what Israel is asking the U.S. to do in Iran. I mean, this is a potential big war, and Ukraine is not asking for that, any U.S. troops on the ground. So in that sense, even if you're against, you know, starting another war here or there in the world, or you don't want U.S. troops somewhere, I think that's important to note that Ukraine isn't asking for that. And our military production and equipment and stuff that we're sending them or selling in some cases to them, a lot of it is given, is actually helpful to our economy because a lot of it's produced in the U.S. And it's also helpful for training and understanding uses of these weapons also in different contexts.
Yeah, these are not like self-explanatory, just figure it out sort of weaponry. A couple of really important things there. The toolkit, weapons and artillery support, direct aid, intelligence sharing, and increasing Russian sanctions. These things, you know, it's always curious when we're doing nothing, is it simply preservation of status quo ante, or is it actually like taking away the supports that we had? We're in, and I would say, somewhat of an improvement. I mean, we heard early on in the Trump administration that they were going to stop intelligence sharing with Ukraine.
They did for a little while.
And they did for it wasn't a long period of time, but absolutely crucial. I want to talk about the weapons piece of this, because there has been this sort of flow in this conflict where Ukraine will get very close to running out of things, and what the U.S.'s role has been, and can the EU step up that particular element of the toolkit in fighting Putin's increasingly aggressive, increasingly dangerous land grabs. We continue the discussion with Dr. Yoshiko Herrera, political scientist with the University of Wisconsin-Madison, award-winning professor and commentator here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Joining me this half hour is Professor Yoshiko Herrera of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a political scientist and expert on Russia and international relations. We've been talking about the toolkit to push back on Putin's continued aggression. And it includes money, weapons, intel, sanctions. And it is the weapons piece that has been periodically throughout the conflict quite a tipping point, potential cliff to fall off of for Ukraine. Can the European Union step up and provide those munitions? There's a long supply chain and manufacturing process. This isn't a light switch flip where the U.S. says, listen, we're not going to be sending as much direct weapons and ammunition or munition support to Ukraine. And EU just says, oh, yeah, we'll send those over. It's going to take some time. How precarious is the armament situation for Ukraine at this moment?
Well, I think it's not as bad as it could be. One thing that's been in the news, there's two things that have been in the news a lot. One is drones and the innovation in drones, both in the production of them in Ukraine, also the use of fiber optic cable drones. So these are drones that are kind of connected by fishing wire that can't be jammed. And Russia innovated on those, but Ukraine is trying to catch up in that area. And also the Iranian Shahid drones that Russia is adapting. So drones are a big part of the story. And the other part of the story is missile defense. The Patriot missile defense system is really important for stopping the ballistic missiles coming into Ukraine. That's the ballistic missiles plus drones are what Russia has shot over 600 of over the last weekend. So the U.S. is the manufacturer of Patriot missile systems and defense systems, and that requires missiles to shoot down the ballistic missiles coming in. Now, Ukraine could run out of those, and that would be difficult for their defense. So I think those are some of the things people are looking at. But also, there's a lot of discussion in Europe now about what they can send and how quickly they can do it. And one thing I think that's interesting is the new German Chancellor Merz just said they're no longer going to say what they're sending to Ukraine. They're going to send things and they're not going to say what it is. And some people are speculating maybe that means they're going to send some things they weren't previously willing to send because of some disagreements internally. So that's another possibility. But there's no question that Europe is behind. Europe is behind on its own defense, not just in helping Ukraine. And they're desperately trying to catch up now.
And as a corollary to that, I believe I heard within the last couple of days that, I don't know if it's specific to Germany or the EU, that they also were lifting restrictions on prior direct military equipment and munitions that had been given, but they were saying, don't use this stuff yet, that had been, like, effectively they had been going more gloves off. Can you correct my layperson's hackneyed recounting of that?
Well, the thing is that situation changes a lot, so it's actually hard to keep up with it. I mean, one way to understand the story is that since the beginning of this war, restrictions were put on Ukraine, and the reason was they were feared an escalation, nuclear escalation, et cetera. And every quarter or so, those restrictions get lifted. And like by many of the things, I mean, it's one of the criticisms, unfortunately, of the Biden administration, that if they had lifted some of the restrictions earlier in 2022, Ukraine would have been able to do things that they weren't able to do. So the short story of these restrictions is that there's always these restrictions put in place, then they get lifted, and then everybody complains, why didn't you lift them earlier? Mm-hmm. And people retort because you're afraid of escalation. So that's kind of an ongoing debate. But at this point, it's a little bit different in that Europeans are considering, like, what do they need for their own defense, especially if the U.S. isn't going to be the backstop if there's a further Russian invasion of Poland or Estonia or something like that.
Folks, that's Professor Yoshiko Herrera of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We found the sound of J.D. Vance saying, I don't care about Russia. Let's take a listen. It's short.
I think it's ridiculous that we're focused on this border in Ukraine. I got to be honest with you. I don't really care what happens to Ukraine one way or another.
There it is. So the broader question that I want to ask you, and former Senator Jeff Flake put out an opinion piece today in the Washington Post, and he basically calls out Republicans, and he's, are there no more Russia hawks? Like, now is the time to stand up. What are you all doing? We're hearing this wishy-washiness from our president. We know where J.D. Vance stands. Are there no more foreign policy hawks in the Republican Party, or is the only place on the planet that they care about is Gaza?
I just want to show you our Wisconsin State Journal today also reprinting a Wall Street Journal, the other WSJ editorial, saying GOP Senate should press for sanctions. So the Wall Street Journal story reprinted today in Wisconsin State Journal is saying Lindsey Graham, Tom Cotton, and Blumenthal on the Democrat side have 82 senators lined up to support a bill for sanctions against countries that buy Russian oil and gas. And if they had President Trump's support, they think that they could get that bipartisan bill across. So yeah, there are still some hawks. It's not even hawks. It's people who care about democracy and American values. I mean, there are still some among the Republicans, but so far they have been relatively quiet.
The lesson, as always, pick up the phone, call your senators, call your congresspeople, and tell them to use sanctions to help press Russia. That is the bottom line here, that the U.S. needs to support Ukraine. That is the pathway forward, not from Yoshiko and I, but from Republicans in the Senate, former Republicans. We can't wait to talk to you again, Yoshiko. Thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure. You take care. Folks, when we come back, an exclusive, the crazy Rojo sound from yesterday. Can you believe he might be dabbling in some conspiracy theories? I wore my special T-shirt. Watch us on YouTube or listen in here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're excited as I am. Wisconsin, we deserve better than Ron Johnson. We deserve better than a conspiracy theorist. We deserve better than a guy that doesn't understand what peer review means in academia, in science, in medicine. We deserve a man who won't lie his butt off to ensure that he can get reelected. He spoke yesterday at the Milwaukee Press Club, said some bonkers things. We're going to start there. But then we're going to go to the content that nobody else in the state has, because he went from the Milwaukee Press Club to the Medical College of Wisconsin, you know, and talked to scientists and doctors. And they had some questions for the senator. But let us start with the press club. There's so much cruelty in the big, brutal bill, but not quite enough for our senator. Let's take a listen. This is Ron Johnson about taking a stand.
There's no amount of pressure that President Trump can apply to me that exceeds the pressure I feel, the promises I made to stop mortgaging our kids' future.
So you're
my loyalty is to the future of this country. My loyalty is our kids and grandkids whose future is being diminished because of what we've done to them already.
And his way that he's going to stand up for our kids' future is by killing their parents' dreams today, by making their parents and their kids sicker, poorer, less secure, more stressed, with less health care. I could go on and on. And then he dipped his toe to some vaccine conspiracy nonsense. Again, this is the Milwaukee Press Club. Our Senator Ron Johnson yesterday, cut 15.
You said my claims have been debunked. Where and when? There's not one thing I've said during this COVID that's been proven untrue. Now, there are people that maybe disagree with me, but today on VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which the FDA and CDC were touting the most up-to-date figures, there have been over 35,000 deaths reported on the VAERS system worldwide associated with the COVID-19 vaccine. Over 1.5 million adverse events. Now, there are two main complaints about the VAERS system. One, it doesn't prove causation. That's true. But do you realize that of those 35,000 deaths, 25% either occur on the day of vaccination or within day one or two? So maybe it doesn't prove causation, but it certainly gives a guy like me concern. I was concerned about it back in March and April of 2021. So again, you're saying that what I said about the safety of the vaccines has been debunked. It hasn't been debunked at all. Have you not noticed the Twitter files? Have you not noticed how federal health agencies were censoring truth and calling it misinformation?
What planet does this man live on? This is the guy that in the middle of COVID said on a radio station with thousands of people listening that, you know, just use a little freaking mouthwash for that pesky COVID. It's bananas. Yes, there are adverse event reports. There are adverse event reports for aspirin, for ibuprofen, for Viagra. It is utter drivel that comes out of this man's mouth with perfect confidence. I always like the, like, don't let the facts get in the way of my confidence with which I speak this nonsense. It's like Ron Johnson's cri de guerre, his modus operandi, is just say it with confidence and then scoff at those who try to ask you questions. Well, then he went to the medical college. Little different crowd. Now, this cut is a little longer, but keep your hats on, because it's quite the thing. This is a doctor asking Ron Johnson about this very set of nonsense that we heard from the press club. Cut 20.
So I wanted to commend you for coming to an institution of science and medicine that has recently been so harmed by your administration's policies and your own votes. And also, I'm truly intrigued by your, you know, thoughts about speaking your truth to a group and the contemporaries of the researchers and scientists and physicians who saved your daughter's life, despite speaking to everybody with such like disrespect for the work that they're doing. As a surgeon, I do know exactly what I'm charging my patients or what the institution is charging our patients for the services that we provide. And I will say that most of the people who are going to be disproportionately affected by the policies that are being enacted are your voters. These are often rural patients. These are veterans. These are elderly patients. And I am very informed, as is most of the room, informed on these policies, much more than I think you're giving us credit for, as well as the real world impact of the work that we're doing and these policies. So have you given any thought to reflecting on the damage to your specific voter pool and the people who have supported getting you into office so that when they are losing their house and losing their livelihood, I can discuss some of those issues with them?
But you seem to be hung up like all I care about are my voters. So I'm concerned about the medical profession. I'm concerned about the fact that faith is eroded in it. I'd say partly because you pushed a COVID injection that literally did kill people, did permanently disable them. You can shake your head like that didn't happen. It happened. And the fact that you continue to deny it in general, not necessarily individuals, doesn't help people's faith in you. So again, I've spent a lot of time with the vaccine injured. I've seen the stats. I've seen how NIH covered it up, how they knew about myocarditis and simply didn't issue the warning. So.
Wow. When a doctor who, by her own admission, clearly wasn't a Ron Johnson supporter, a surgeon, says to you, I know how this works, and says in part, please speak to us with some respect. We disagree. We're concerned about the disparate impacts of your administration, this MAGA regime's policies. Your response is basically, people have lost faith in the medical profession, and I know better than you know. Newsflash, Senator Ron Johnson. You know what institution in these United States has the lowest approval ratings of all time right now? Congress. You, sir. The surgeon was asking him a question. Do you reflect upon your positions? Do you see? She didn't say these words. Do you seek out alternative information? Or do you exist in your little conspiracy theory bubble with Tucker Carlson and ivermectin? His answer? Screw you. I know better. How dare you ask me this? You should need to look at the public's lack of trust in the medical. You know why they have trust is eroded in the medical profession? Because crackpots like RFK get on Joe Rogan's podcast and spew nonsense that you then repeat, Senator. And as if the insanity of what Ron Johnson was saying yesterday wasn't quite enough, we have some breaking news for you. The Make America Healthy Again report. Yes, that came out from RFK and Donald Trump's Department of Health and Human Services. And guess what? It cited fake scientific studies. So they're not for scientific. They're just made up, cited made up research. Had incorrect citations to research that did exist. Even some of that research that did exist that they cited incorrectly. They extrapolated inaccurate results. Misinformation, made up nonsense, riddled with errors. What the hell is that guy reading? You reading that, oh, the error-strewn political propaganda that's being spewed out by DHHS? RFK Jr., the guy that talks about placebo studies and said, oh, it was never, blah, 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 goes on about it, not knowing that placebo studies for certain terminal diseases and illnesses are considered unethical in the medical profession. Let's listen to some more from the Medical College Craziness, brought to you by Senator Ron Johnson. This one's nice. After insulting a room full of doctors and scientists, he thought, well, these are rich people. I should probably insult poor people, too. Let's take a listen.
You have to reduce that structural deficit. And again, you continue to punish success, you get less of it, and you'll dry up federal revenue from that standpoint. So you might feel good. Good. Yeah, we're really getting those rich guys. It's those rich guys that invest, risk their capital, build the business, you know, create the types of jobs and opportunity. You can deny that fact, but again, now you're really denying reality.
Well, I'd like to say I disagree with that, but I'll allow time for another question.
By the way, I've never met a poor person that created jobs. You know, keep denying reality that it's people that have wealth that to put the capital to work.
A doctor, he is not. A scientist, he is not. A researcher, he is not. An economist, he is not. And a working man, he is not. With all due respect to every wealthy person that made their wealth through their own blood, sweat, and tears, through their own ingenuity and creativity, they don't scale that wealth without working people. They don't scale that wealth without working people, and yes, poor people that buy their products, that download their apps. You want to talk about job creation? It's the middle class that creates jobs because we consume the products that the companies produce. Ron Johnson doesn't understand the most fundamental element of capitalism: supply and, Senator, demand. The hubris, the out-of-touchedness of Wisconsin's Republican senator, the disdain, the disrespect, the dismissiveness is unparalleled. It is cruel, but at base, he's just wrong. We come back. We have at least one more cut from the craziness. The craziness that is Wisconsin's Senator Ron Johnson. If you're watching us on YouTube, check it out. Wore my special Ron Johnson t-shirt for you today. Wisconsin needs less Ron Johnson. America needs less Ron Johnson. Our economy, our sciences need less Ron Johnson. We continue this exclusive, bring you more sound from his wackadoo appearance before the Medical College of Wisconsin, which they've tried to scrub from the internet, but we got it for you right here. Keep it locked on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and my hair, I've kept it at a smoldering level after Ron Johnson's bananas bonanza. Maybe there it is. It's a bananas bonanza yesterday, starting at the Milwaukee Press Club with a bunch of derisive conspiracy-laden retorts to legit questions from reporters, and then he moved on to spread more of his nonsense and insanity at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Trick is, when you got a room full of scientists and doctors, they don't like to play like that. We've had this exclusive here at Civic Media. Magically, after his appearance at the medical college, you know, things seem to disappear. So big, big thanks to my producer, Jacob, my senior producer, Jamie, for working so hard to track down the sound one and get it ready to go for this afternoon's program. I get to talk about it. They do all the hard work. I have the fun part. So thank you very much. I wanted to take, you know, so just as a recap, COVID vaccines kill people, but not COVID. You can cure that with ivermectin and some mouthwash. This is what he was peddling at the press club and the medical college. Can someone please ask Ron Johnson in response to that? Sir, what was your alternative plan while you were in Congress? Well, you were in the Senate during COVID. Was your preference that we just let hospitals be overrun, morgues that required refrigerated trucks to hold all the dead bodies? We just let that sort itself out. It's interesting to me that oftentimes it is people that look and have bank accounts like RFK Jr. and Ron Johnson that are ones that are like, you know what? Screw those vaccines. I might feel the same if I could buy a freaking island, erect a sky-high fence, and sequester myself, filter my own water, filter my own air, hire people to grow all my vegetables, pay them, you know, the sub-minimum wage, and tell them to worry about if they get sick. When you live in a gilded palace and can afford that, when you don't have to go to work because your wealth isn't taxed like work is, frankly, I find some of your opinions about healthcare to be a little offensive, because what you're saying to working people who have to, you know, rub elbows, screw you. And you do it in the face of a room full of doctors that are telling you they know better, and you look at them and go, no. You need to worry about the public's faith and the medical profession has been going down. Yeah, because you and RFK and other rich people with agendas that collect massive paychecks from bogus medical organizations peddling all this misinformation to what? Largely highly affluent white families in richy-do suburbs that are like, no, my little Peyton isn't getting her measles vaccine. And listen, parents get to make healthcare decisions for their kids, but there are consequences to those decisions. Like maybe your kid doesn't get to go to school with other kids if they don't get their vaccines. And there are good medical reasons for the regular course of vaccines to not be for every child. Yes, all of that. I don't mean to deride or be glib about that at all. But you do that in consultation, not with people like RFK Jr. And Rojo. You do that in consultation with your doctor, and you get a second opinion. Let's take this last bit of crazy from the Medical College of Wisconsin. I believe this is going to be, Does Ron Johnson understand peer review? Answer, no. Let's take a listen. Cut 7.
I actually would support federal funding for basic science and research where there's no economic benefit doing so. There's plenty of research being done where there people have an economic benefit for doing so, but you know, we do need, I think, the federal government to invest in that. I have no problem with that. How do you return integrity to it, though? Again, when you have Fauci issuing these grants for 40 years, Fauci got the result he wanted. What I've come to learn, you know, being connected to this, group of people who certainly have a different opinion of all these things, science has been corrupted, just as Eisenhower pretty well predicted. Peer review is a joke. Or it can be a joke. You know, they're volunteers. There will oftentimes be peer reviewers who want to tank the study they want to review. So it's not exactly an honest review.
As someone who has published a peer review journal article, oh my God. Guess what has corrupted peer review? people like Ron Johnson, who set up fake medical organizations to try to put out things that look like peer review. Guess what wasn't peer reviewed? The DHHS report on Make America Healthy Again that's cited to studies that don't exist and is riddled with errors. The stupidity, the arrogance, the flatulence of what this man says is truly shocking. Well, peer review isn't a thing. Facts aren't a thing. Certain people have different opinions. Well, they're badly informed opinions, and they're just that, opinions. Why do we have the scientific method and peer review? And if you missed this headline this week, yes, DHHS, we're not going to publish in peer-reviewed journals anymore. We're just going to make our own up. That happened this week, too. You know, the American Medical Association and JAMA, and just pshaw on that. Like, it was Fauci's agenda. He got what he wanted. Yeah, saving hundreds of millions of lives, Ron. What was your master plan during COVID? I heard mouthwash. I'm sorry, Ron, but I'm really glad that I and the people that I know got a vaccine for COVID and didn't die. We might have more Rojo tomorrow because we need more Rojo to finally get to less Rojo. You know what I'm saying? We got to hear the stupid to finally vote the man out of office. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's going to do it for me. You got Nightlight coming up. Don't go anywhere. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for science and peer-reviewed journals.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.